This is everybody know your education.
Wait, are we recording?
We have been, but we're not in the episode.
Oh, okay, so that's the distinction. We had an issue with the Rage Against the Machine episode,
Well, we
correct?
haven't done the well like the, before we did the welcome as like a
You
joke.
did it twice.
I know. I thought it was a joke. I
That's
want you to
why I
do it because I feel like I'm the one who always gets you, and so now I want you to. Do we know what we're talking about after I say welcome?
Yeah, exactly what you don't want to talk about, what you think we shouldn't be talking about anymore.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
Well, no, kidding.
I'm okay with this. I'm okay. I'm ready.
All right, fuck it. Welcome,
Welcome.
welcome, everybody.
Oh, look at that.
Colin, you look
Beautiful.
good. I was really nervous. This is.
You look good too. You do look good. I laughed when we first came on because I was not prepared for it. It was your face. You were smiling. You.
For anybody who doesn't know, every now and then I will just buzz my hair off. And Colton is seeing quite a glare coming off the top of my head because it was hot yesterday, man, and I was done with it. I was done with it.
It was such a like my cognitive dissonance of like I was seeing the hair there and I was like, no, the hair is not there. It
Well,
was you look good.
this isn't an effect. This is not one of those
You
Zoom
look
effects.
quite cool
I
down
do.
there.
I feel cool.
I
And
want to talk to you about weather. That's like the most boring thing. That's not what a
I
podcast is
love it.
for.
Let's do this.
It's hot. Weather talk. Know your weather, everybody. It's hot. There you go.
Whether
This
or
has
not you
been
like it, we're doing
this
this.
has been know your. I don't have anything else to say. It's just been hot.
It has been a little warm, and what's sad is it's only going to get hotter. I feel like I'm falling victim to it now. For years previous, I would tell people, and they go, "Oh, it's hot out here." It's like it's only 95. We're hitting 115. We're gonna get there. But this time around, I hit 97 and went, "It's hot. I don't like this."
See,
I'm already complaining way too far ahead of time.
I'm such a moving away from Lancaster has made me so soft because I don't even touch those temperatures anymore. It is 80 right now. And then up here, San Jose, I'm like, yeah, we're done. 80 is
What's the
plenty for me.
humidity like there?
We aren't really doing weather talk, aren't we? Okay, everybody.
We're in.
Humidity.
We're starting it
Humidity.
this way, man.
Devastating.
People are complaining about the sports talk. Get ready for this new one.
Humidity 46%.
Yeah, see, that's way, it's dry out here.
In Lancaster, California, if anyone is unfamiliar, like dead of summer, it is the driest, like oppressive heat it is. And I was thinking about this. How in the world did we used to practice in that little shack behind my grandpa's house?
I'll tell you, I still do it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I am still like, I will show. Now, granted, we've gotten a lot better. We have two little ACs in there, but when it comes time to record, we have to turn the air conditioning off. And so, for anybody who has any complaints about Default American Records, they sound bad because our brains are melting while we're in the midst of recording.
Being in a band, I remember, well, there's this smell. The smells of being in a band
Yeah.
are singular, I think, because I do recall, I loved going out and playing in Sven and like practice. Sven, by the way, I feel like I'm just talking to you. No, we're that was the practice space that we named, Rob named it Sven, and
For some reason, yeah.
I just let it be that. It was behind my grandpa's house, and that was a great place to
It was
practice.
awesome. I
It
miss it.
was.
It pops up in dreams every now and then.
It's one of those like I think everyone has like their space and like we practiced in other places, garages. And actually our first practice was outside in my grandpa's house. That
Yeah,
was
that's right. In the backyard, we
right there.
auditioned whatever his name was on
Don't
guitar.
remember.
Yeah.
Californication or something.
Californication, but yes,
That's right,
I
yeah.
like you. You enunciated California Cation.
California Haitian. But
Yeah.
it's
Now we're dropping other countries in
I
here.
I don't know All what's right. happening now. But yeah, it was, I just recall it being very hot and sweaty, and then practicing didn't make it any less sweaty. And I'm actually also remembering being on tour with Jesse Williams, with Dustin and another girl who was traveling with us. I recall at one point smelling something, like, that's me. I smell that sure. way.
Well, see, that was a plus side for me. As you already know, I was a very messy person. So, like, bad smells, I was just, my nose was already caught up to. So I could go and hang out with a, I can go out and go into Sven with all four sweaty of us and be like, I don't really smell it. It's
it,
fine.
It has been a while since I've been inside of, like, an actual rock club or, you know, just any kind of playing a show. You all look like you played a pretty great show. I got a random image, by the way, weird segue, but
yes,
of Default American playing what looked like, where was that?
Transplants Brewery.
Where is Transplants? Is that not on Lancaster Boulevard? That another place?
It is not on Lancaster Boulevard. I mean, it feels weird to give the directions to it. But if you're in Lancaster anytime, there's if you go near 10th Street West and Rancho Vista, before you hit Rancho Vista, hang a left and you'll run into Transplants. I think they have Lucky Luke's over there. It's right before the Walmart. There you go.
But I guess the way I should have phrased this question is, have I been to Transplants Brewery?
Probably not.
Okay.
Actually, no. Fair. No. Well, when was the last time you were in Lancaster?
The last time we played a show together. It's probably the last time I was in Lancaster at that other brewery.
For the listeners, how long ago would that be?
Man. You know what? If I looked up the video that Leo uploaded of you, of all of us playing, let me look. Default American. Colton. This is going to depress me, I think.
Probably not. I can't imagine you're like, oh, it's been so long since I've been there.
I mean, it has.
But do you look at that sadly?
I do. I miss playing shows with you. I don't think I miss playing shows, like, as an idea.
You don't miss the AV. You miss the people that you love,
I think that's a nice way of putting it. So I believe this show, Bravery Brewery, was the venue. The last show that I've played, and the one we played together, and that was 11 years ago. To the day. No, I don't know. I don't think it was to the day. But
it feels like just 20 years ago.
I honestly do not. Actually, now that I'm looking at it, I don't know if these are the same people. Is that Leo? Move, Rob, so I can see if it's Leo.
I'm trying.
Yeah, it's probably Leo. Anywho.
Oh, yeah, it's when we did. It was Leo. It's when we did.
Only means.
By any means necessary.
I should know. That's my song. I can't remember the name of the song.
Well, you said only means. That was enough of a guidance point for me.
It was a thing. But I do not miss playing shows, mainly because I never played a show that I felt prepared for. And so every time, all I thought was, man, I wish that I felt better about us playing this show.
And it's funny you say that show was actually one to where I felt like we were prepared. We played a good set. And also Transplants, it's a really good venue out here.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great setup. The stage is way too high. That's my only complaint. And the stage is like 5'6".
That's a nice music-related question to ask you. What are you looking for in a good venue to play it?
A stage, honestly. I can't stand the shows that have been played to where you're on floor level with everybody else, because that just gives the excuse. Like, you know how comedians will do a set, and like if people talk, they're kind of like, hey, shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on floor level as a live band, nobody gives a shit. There is just like, you literally need that. Like, the stage is your soapbox to go like, hey, hear me. Notice that there's a band playing.
There's a hierarchy that's imposed when you're on a stage.
Yes. And yeah, there is a little bit of shut up, just kind of, for better or for worse, listen to me.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's worse. But it's that they got great monitors. They actually have
They have monitors.
I mean, that's humongous. But I mean, you saw I'll put it up on the Instagram. This time around, everybody, I'll put the image up on Instagram.
See, it's weird because I always remember, I was opening for full bands for most of the time I was doing my solo stuff, when I wasn't, of course, playing with, you know, all you guys. And
you could say the name.
Oh. I usually, my move though, because I hated, I when I'm by myself, or when I was by myself and I'm on a stage, I think it was the opposite. If I'm, the further I'm away, like anytime it's a person with an acoustic and that's it,
that's
I think your number one like obstacle, other than this, not sucking, like not being terrible, is getting them to pay attention. Because there's no reason, I've said this before, when you have, it's just you and an acoustic guitar, you're asking a lot of an audience, because you are never going to be able to captivate them with, you know, what a full band can do. And that's for a lot of people when they're out wanting to go watch a show. That's the, especially if it's a rock show, right? That's the energy that they're looking for. And I am not the energy they're looking for.
No, you're definitely more coffee shop energy. And I think I've actually seen some of your best work in coffee shop environment.
And it's funny because some of those I liked playing and others I didn't, because like, I'm a prima donna, man. I don't like when things happen while I'm playing. So like when someone's making a drink, I was just like, God, it's terrible. But my move would always be get off the stage and walk into the crowd. And I usually, if I could, I wouldn't even use a microphone. And because that to me, if I was going to give any advice to anyone playing solo shows, especially solo shows where there are like full bands playing before and after you, it would be, don't use a mic, get down as close to the crowd as you can, because when you have to actually sing louder for them to hear you, people will naturally be quieter. I've found that like 9 times out of 10. That one other time, it's terrible, it's a disaster, but.
Well, that's true. And I think you actually brought this up in a previous episode, or at least I did, where I thought your secret weapon was just walk around the microphone. Maybe not get down on surface level with the peasants, but, you know, just go around the microphone and start shouting at the peasants.
I think that was when I was younger, too. I felt, I was a little more aggressive with that when I was younger. As I got older and I was playing more shows, usually I was not caring as much, but also, I don't know. It's more aggro energy, maybe.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Well, you're pissed off because there are people talking.
I'm usually pissed off because I'm playing a show. And I was like, I don't want to do this.
Dude, I was in the same boat. Everybody knew my reputation. My reputation has gotten out there. And it's like, so how are you doing? It's like, well, I got to play a show. It's like, yeah, I heard.
I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but I still remember the day that you and I had to do 2 shows in a day. We had to talk about this. I'm sorry.
We probably did.
But I just remember it was Battle of the Bands earlier that day with Hollis and Walter. Like
down in the valley or something?
Something like that. Yeah. And then we had to drive back down to play with Default American. Oh, no, it was Bar Lights.
Yeah.
At that point. And we played with them and Joe and Leftmore. I don't know where the hell that was. That was on the east side, somewhere in Lancaster.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you just take no.
No. I just remember after you looked at me, and like the Barlett show was not good. And then after you looked at me, you went, it's over.
Probably. Now, to be fair, I probably did that every show. It's like, I'm done. How many more times are you guys going to drag me out here for this? And the answer is infinite, because I just recently played a show. But it was nice. It was a good show, and it was nice actually catching up with like old friends. I don't want to name any of them because I don't want to forget any of them, and I'm certain that all of them listen to this podcast.
That's fair.
Every single one of them.
Well, cool, man. I'm glad you guys are playing again. I'm gonna be.
Let's not get carried away. We played again. I'm not willing to dedicate to playing again.
You had a whole thing in the back too, Default American.
Yeah,
thing.
No, it's cool. It was neato.
So you had something you wanted to talk to me about before we get into. I also, by the way, everybody, song spotlight.
Song spotlight yet again.
We're talking about The Chain.
That's right, Fleetwood Mac.
Fleetwood Mac, and we're gonna. I have a diagram for our second segment, laying out all of the relationship phases that each member has gone through.
I'm glad you have that. My diagram is more based on the music, but I did want to do more of a history of Fleetwood Mac.
I definitely don't have that. It's actually, this is one of those bands where it's not even just exhausting. I just, at some point, I was like, I actually don't care. I actually don't care anymore.
We might be getting ahead of ourselves, but yeah, there's a little bit of buttered toast with Fleetwood Mac for me.
I've realized that my idea of the Fleetwood Mac that I like, it's like a span of four records.
Mine's a span of one record.
When there's like a certain lineup, and I'm like, okay, that's the version that I've listened to and thought was good. And other versions, I went, oh no. Including a version of Fleetwood Mac that actually wasn't Fleetwood Mac. It was a fake lineup. I don't know. That's just a little tease, everybody.
I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
Tease for second segment.
But so Colt and I are going to try to be a little more responsible with our sports talk and culture robuses. However, this one is just irresistible for me. Mm-hmm. So we are about to get started on the finals. Uh-huh. Well, technically on this episode, we're in the finals. We're on game four. The day this episode comes out, we're on day four.
When is game one?
Game one, I believe, is on June 5th.
Okay.
And we are recording on June 1st right now. Mm-hmm. And game four will be on June 13th, Friday the 13th, a day that does kind of... Is it stupid that I actually don't like Friday the 13th?
I mean, I don't want to, like... I want to tell you no or yes, but...
I'll just quote The Office. I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. You know, I do have...
I like it because they always play... they usually do play Friday the 13th on AMC. They should.
I just remember hearing that, like, fire departments and police stations would say that, actually, no, on Friday the 13th, things do get a little... Haywire.
I'm a fan. Well, no, and I should ask if it's stupid to say that I'm a fan of Friday the 13th.
Or was that like full moon? It might have just been full moons.
I don't know.
So, I'm stitious. Everybody.
You clearly have some kind of culture robbers
yes.
vision for yes. the NBA finals.
So I'm assuming you're already predicting the Thunder.
I think I've already told you the Thunder.
You have.
Your culture robbers
have been very successful so far. And I'm still thinking with my heart and not my head. I'm going Pacers.
Pacers are not going to win, my guy.
See, I want to know what your rationale is behind this.
I'm going off of a couple things. One is regular season performance.
Okay.
The other is the path to the playoffs.
Okay.
And the East is weak. The West was insanely stacked for the Thunder. At a certain point, it wasn't, right? I've already mentioned there were teams in the West that, I mean, I think if they were in the East, like if the Warriors or the Lakers were in the East, I think they would have, well.
See, I don't know about that.
Would have done better.
Because what were the predictions going into the playoffs? What were going to be the two teams in the finals?
It's going to be the Thunder.
It was going to be the Thunder Celtics. That was everybody's prediction on it. And it wasn't like that was a clear shot Thunder win. They thought that was going to be a really good, really good series based off the two teams. Mm-hmm. Knicks beat the Celtics, and I don't want to hear anybody say, well, Jason Tatum went out. Celtics were already getting eliminated. Then Jason Tatum hurt himself,
yeah,
which I was not rooting for. Fuck the Celtics, but I wasn't rooting for that. And the Pacers have been on fire and have had one of the best postseasons I've ever seen. Now, granted, from coming back, but I think both teams are actually really deep. Great defense. I think we're going to look at low scoring games.
This is like every NCAA tournament that I don't watch, because even when I really try hard to watch college sports, it just like the idea of none of it mattering, I just can't. But every time there's
what happens every NCAA
March. Okay. Well, in my experience, every time there's a March Madness thing. So you have, right. You have like the Cinderella team that like the whole country gets behind. They're like, oh my God, this team. And what happens, uh-huh. man? They never win. That's the top seeds.
It's not always the top. I've seen the top seeds screw it up plenty of times. I don't have any particular reference point right now, but I don't think either one of us have a particular reference towards a Cinderella team right now.
Well,
UCLA, but that's because I'm a UCLA fan. But I
culture robbers this. I'm riding high on my culture robbers win. The Thunder's in five.
Okay.
In five's my go-to, by the way.
I mean, Lakers in five. I'm still reeling off of Lakers in five. That's my true culture Robbins, is the Lakers are still going to find some way to pull this off.
They're in Cancun, my guy.
Yes, they are in Cancun. God, that is such a funny statement. I'm so glad that one is stuck around in the NBA universe. It's like, these guys are ready for Cancun. But no. So game four, it's coming out the day this episode comes out.
Yeah.
What is a series at? today that this episode.
If it's game four, so
yeah, so we got three games before.
Yeah. So I, this is more of a math thing for me than it is a prediction thing. I have to like work it out.
Yeah, he's got to take 5 seconds here.
I honestly think it's Thunder up 2-1.
I actually have the same prediction. I think Thunder up 2-1, but because we're in Indiana, I think the Pacers are about to tie it up today.
Everybody. Well, I'll spot you this. I think Thunder in five. I think the Pacers may come out game one and knock them in the mouth a little bit. It's Thunder right. have. Is it still where best record gets home court advantage?
Yeah, I'm pretty. Yeah, they got home court.
Yeah. You remember baseball Don't where they used me. To give the
All-Star
World
game?
Series to the winner of the All-Star game?
I still want that. I still want that's that, damn
terrible.
It.
It's terrible.
I just miss competitive All-Star games.
I haven't watched an All-Star game and for any league.
You know why?
In quite some time.
Because they're not competitive.
Home run derbies, and I watch...
Of course. Three-point competition. Yeah. Slam dunk contest, I will watch, but I will be like...
Depending on who's in it, but...
Nothing will ever compete with Aaron Gordon and Zach...
LaVine.
LaVine, thank you.
Yeah. Or yeah. I don't know. I don't actually know. Well, okay. So just to get it into the record.
That's all it is. I just
we
felt
have
like
the
it's
same culture Robinson.
We do, which is kind of boring, except for I'm predicting the Pacers, but to pull it off. I think they're gonna win. I'm riding the Halliburton. It's been a long time since I've rooted for a Halliburton. But this one just felt right because by the time the episode comes out, we could actually have a statement on the sporting community that is actually relevant at that moment.
We're in it, man. We're part of the zeitgeist. We really are. I've mentioned that before, and I believe it now.
The amount of times that I will edit down an episode and our sports predictions are way outdated. 2 weeks is a long time in the sports universe.
You have the power to cut all this out.
I will exercise my power as per usual. I'm sorry to anybody who doesn't like sports, but we do. And again, it's our podcast. And I really do apologize, but all you got to do is email us at no.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com and say, stop.
The minute someone tells us to, and to be fair, I think several
slow
people
down,
have
Rob
told
Thomas.
Us. Yeah. Several people have told us to stop. And we have said no. But the minute someone emails us and says stop. And not just tells us that we should be formatting our email differently.
Exactly. Don't complain. Just email us. Please email us. And I'm not going to go as far because I think Rob Thomas said at one point in time, the front man for Matchbox 20, he was like, the day somebody comes up and tells me I'm not a good singer, I'll stop singing. I was like, that's not true, buddy.
That's not.
I guarantee a few days after that, somebody walked up to him and said that to him. And he was just like, okay, you called my bluff.
When did he say that?
I don't know, man. It was when we were kids. I was watching an interview with him.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know that was the whole, oh, now I have like to re-examine my Matchbox 20 feelings.
I think he's a good singer. I don't think he's a great singer. I think
if there's something wrong with that band, it's not his singing.
Ooh, what would you say it is?
I don't know. I'm just going off of like, I don't hear that band. To be honest, that's actually, I've never heard a band and been completely turned off because of the singing specifically.
Never?
I don't think so.
I
feel like I probably said on the podcast at one point or another, oh, it's the voice. I don't know. There's a band we're listening to, okay. There's one band.
If you say Default Americans, so help me God.
It was not just the singing, but I do remember talking to anyone going, yeah, the singing's not great. It was, Hi, Casey. It was the Deer Hunter. But that singing was not the, and that was more earlier stuff where he had that weird kind of croon to his voice that it felt very.
Oh,
kind of
yeah.
Artificial.
It was the croony song. I know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Casey. I didn't like that one either. I like your voice, though. I think you do have a good
I think he's gone on to do other stuff that's better. Yeah. But anywho. All right.
I think this is the perfect time.
Well, okay. I just want to tell you, summer started for me. So this is like, you're seeing laid back
summer.
Same
here, buddy.
I got no more classes.
Summer,
I'm
Rob.
On summer vacation.
You got no bald, more Rob.
Teachers. No more books.
No more books.
No more students and dirty looks.
I'm actually doing good on my book intake this year.
What do you read?
I've
What
read
the last thing you read? Yeah.
The last thing I read was actually Go Catch a Watchman. Go Fetch a Watchman. What is it? The follow-up to...
Oh, the Harper Lee text. Yeah, yeah. What did you think of that?
It's not that good.
I this is a...
Compared to Kill a Mockingbird, it's not that good.
I'm going to say this is Know Your Rights. Literary rights.
Literally.
If you told me you wanted to scratch our songwriting podcast and just talk about books every 2 weeks, I'm down, man.
Yeah, I'm not.
You know what I would be into? I'm doing this on air and you can cut it out. If we wanted to at one point read like a rock and roll, like a biography or something, and do like a Know Your Rights book club, I'd be into that. There's a Beatles biography I've been circling that I would love to read more about the Beatles, and I'm curious.
How many pages is it?
I believe it is over 1,000 pages, and I think that it's part one of three, and it covers up until before their first record comes out.
Yeah, I'll just watch documentaries on this one. But we can kind of work on that idea.
Let's table it.
Yeah. Yeah, the most attractive books to me are 300 pages long.
Well, that's cool, man. I am actually, what am I reading right? Well, I read like
a lot.
5 books at a time.
Yes.
I don't think other people do this, but I cannot just read one book at a time. It's just not the way and not like in a, oh, I'm so smart, I got to do this. Like, I hope I don't come off that way.
You do.
I think part of it's like attention span, but also I get excited. I'm reading one book and I'm already thinking about other books I want to read. So I'm starting to read that.
Yeah.
But
you can tell we are very well read because we're very well spoken.
Of course. Right now, I'll just say The Buffalo Hunter by Stephen Graham Jones. Very, very good so far.
I love that name. It kind of gives me an idea of what it's about.
Very good. Sort of a indigenous horror, literary horror. Very cool history. I'm also reading The End of Capitalism, which is quite interesting. Is that what it's called?
That's right. Well, if we're doing this, I'm on The People of Paper, which so far is very interesting. This all feels kind of braggadocious. This feels like the
cut some of this. I don't even think I got that.
No,
name.
It's all in. It's all in.
It's not the, what is the name of the book?
Pretentious Dickholes. That's us. Speaking of pretentious, let's get into Fleetwood Mac coming up this next segment.
All right. I'll be interested in what you mean by that, but let's listen to the Blamley.
Blamley, take it away. Give it to the Blam?
Give it to the Blam. That's my catchphrase.
I like it.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to The Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of The Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball and Entertainment podcast.
All right. Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. Okay, two things. I was waiting to talk to you until we were live.
Yes.
I would just talk to Rob.
Clearly, not for the last 2 weeks. It's been a little depressing.
Buddy.
What are you holding in your hand?
Well, I couldn't remember the name of the book. It was How Will Capitalism End that bothered me. What's the name? Wolfgang Streak.
Okay.
I don't look at the cover, just the pages. I don't know what's wrong with it.
I love that.
Step two of what I was going to talk to you about. Are you planning on giving me clues during this segment to what our next song spotlight be?
Talking about my clues, yes. I will leave a trail of breadcrumbs.
I'm ready for this. All right. So do you remember, this was back in My Friend Sam days, our band that we were in together for, I want to say, what? Now that I think about it, it's probably only 5 years.
About 5 years. It feels like it was a much longer time frame, but yes.
Yeah, but
yes,
you
I
at
do
one
remember
point
that.
Were very excited. Yes. You were very excited about doing a cover of The Chain. Do you remember that?
I do, yes.
Now, usually the person who brings a song in has to explain themselves, but I want you to explain yourself. Why?
I think it was because you and I always wanted to do a little bit more of vocal interplay, and we hadn't really done it that much. We had kind of goofed around with it, and just listening to that song and hearing the call and response in the chorus, which I think is still probably the highlight of the song.
Interesting, yeah.
We'll get there. But I just really love the idea of you and I trying to pull that off. And it also gave a moment. I mean, I could picture Tom in a Spidey outfit playing that bass line. You know, it just
is
felt.
Is it because it was quarter note? Boom. I mean, Tom was a good bassist, but
yes, he was absolutely
with a bad memory.
Well, we'll get in. He doesn't have to have much of a memory for the verses because the verses don't have bass on it. It's actually something I love about this song is during the verses, there's no bass, and it seems
That
secondary guitar is kind of playing the role of bass.
He's doing that cool little finger pick with the bass notes, right? Boom.
Yeah, but there are two guitars during the verse. It's the one where he's doing more of the Travis picking, and then the other one where he does. You can hear it, like you can hear him panned apart.
I think they're the same guitar, though.
It's not.
Well, maybe they track something separate. So wait, okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I know what you mean. And when I said interesting regarding the vocals, that was not like facetious. I actually think that's interesting because I agree with you. I think that's one of those songs where, by construction, really simple. Right. It is.
Absolutely.
Funny enough, it kind of reminds me of Tuesday Afternoon, where it's to me partly about how they transition to these different like modes. Right. Like from that, like Travis picking verse, right, with that steady kick into the chorus, right, which keeps the kick. And when the bass kicks in, you're right, it gives it that oomph. And then final outro part.
It's so hard for me not to get ahead of myself because when you say like the steady kick, I mean, when you go from that, like, listen to the wind blow, wash blue sunrise. But then when it goes into the chorus, it does that little, and if you don't love me now, it's not the kick anymore. It's the snare. It's doing that like clat, 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 clat to where it's like there's this transition from the kick being that quarter note to the snare being that quarter note hit on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I find to be...
People just did that.
Yeah. Well, it's not the kick anymore is what I'm more saying to where it's like that's what I find to be the interesting part behind the drums in that segment.
No, when I said I literally just did that, I literally just added drums to one of the songs in the Cocky Tree.
Okay.
And I literally made that decision where I was like, and then I added the snares in.
Yeah. It's a cool little taste to it. Again, I'm trying not to get ahead of myself. I apologize. But,
I mean, at this point, let's just say we're in it.
Well, here's the thing.
Up to ourselves.
I'm dealing with the Mandela effect on this fucking song. I have been searching. I mean, I even had the month of May to search for this. And I've been searching for years to try to find this. There is a recording of this tour. I remember during the second verse, Stevie Nicks extends a lyric. She just extends it and like holds out the note a little bit longer. All day today, I've been looking up, you know, vinyl recordings of it. Don't even try to look it up. It's not there. It doesn't exist. I'm pretty sure I must be wrong. I saw a live performance from 1982, but I don't remember looking up live performances of them. But I just remember it was during the second verse. They hit that, listen to the wind blow down. I remember her doing that. Can't find it. Driving. And yes, I butchered the lyrics there. I can't remember.
Oh, that's all right. I mean, I am currently, I'm watching, I want to say this is VH1, maybe not. It's from when they're playing Warner Brothers Studios in Burbank in 1997. Two things. I mean, the harmonies are there. It's all very similar.
Sure.
I'm more watching, what's his face? Good Lord, man. Lindsey Buckingham. I think he's playing a lot of it on his own, man. There's not a second guitar on that stage, and he's playing the
You're absolutely right. He's doing more of the Travis picking in a live performance. But if you listen to the recording, he's not doing a like exaggerated like that, like dun gun dun
gun dun gun. I see what you're saying. When they track it, this song's tracking history is confusing. Like
it is. So. The tape splicing, actually, I wish I didn't know.
So let's, okay. All right. We're officially starting from the beginning now.
All right.
Fleetwood Mac, pro or no? I think I might be a no for most of it.
Yeah, I lean towards no. I do love Rumors, and I think it might be some of the songs might have been ruined by car ads or political theme songs.
Rumors is great. Like I actually think Rumors is fantastic. Like from beginning to end, I can listen to Rumors, and like even ones that I think at this point people like make fun of, like Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. It's great, man.
It is great, but again, it's the political candidates who decided to use that as a theme. It's like poor Bruce Springsteen with Born in the USA.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, Ronald Reagan fucked that song up.
But I am decidedly, I think, more of a Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks fan than a Fleetwood fan. Because I think it's when, like, the self-titled Fleetwood Mac and then Rumors after that. And I do think they have, what, I think two or three others that come after that. That Tusk and a few others.
You know, if this was their full discography, Tusk would be my overrated song. Not that great a song.
I mean, that would be a long... I mean, by the time that those guys came in, I think they had already put out, like, 7 records, which is crazy. I mentioned to you, this is not about the chain, but I've read this, so I have to kind of share it. The thing about Fleetwood Mac I was aware of before even listening to a lot of what I've heard is how entangled everyone was, because it's, like, the brothers, right? And then, like... people that they were
two
like
different relationships in
with, right? And then I think one of them, like the other guitarist or another member, sleeps with the other guy's wife, and basically a lot of issues. And so right before a big tour, this is before Stevie Nicks and Buckingham get in there, they basically break up, and the manager, I think it is on the hook for this huge tour that Fleetwood Mac is supposed to still play. And he's like, they're going to ruin my reputation. And so he actually decides to put together just like a bunch of rando musicians from other bands and makes them the new Fleetwood Mac. And even tells them that one of the Mac brothers is going to be there. The Fleetwood brothers is going to be there to kind of christen the band and give it some authenticity. And he doesn't agree. He doesn't show up. So it's just these rando people playing as the new Fleetwood Mac. And eventually, like, you can imagine what happens, which is like halfway through the tour, it just falls apart.
But it does fall apart. But well, I mean, no matter what, we got Mick Fleetwood on the drums. He is the namesake of the band, so at least that keeps it together. But there's conjecture here when I say this. Is this histrionics? Is this just trying to sell the band? Like I have that feeling when I was saying pretentiousness leading into the commercial break.
Yeah.
There's a small part of me that goes like, this is, how the hell do you have this harsh breakup and go like, I'll see you at practice tomorrow.
So you're thinking after the new fleet. So after the fake band is put out and they get back together again. Well, they have Bob Welch for the good. I see. And now I'm just going to start to. Give you a whole Fleetwood history.
Good.
That is all before those kinds of breakups. Rumors, right, is where Stevie Nicks and Cunningham, who were together and they were songwriting partners, they break up.
Cunningham.
And then, see, man, all these freaking names.
It's too many names. Too many names. We got a bunch of McVeighs. We got
Buckingham. I'm just going to think of Buckingham Palace. They
Cunningham
break up.
Palace. Yep.
Of course. One of the Fleetwoods breaks up with, was it McVie? They divorce or something?
As a Rams fan, I'm going to go with McVie.
That's, I mean, V-I-E. I know what, after Coburn, I'm never going to trust
you almost said it
again.
You almost said it. It's perfect.
Anywho, I don't know, man. I don't know if I think it adds to what I think of as like the mystique of the band. I'm thinking of like No Doubt also, where Gwen Stefani and what's his face, Tony. See, God,
the
man.
Bass player.
Bass player. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. And I don't think that adds to any of their songs that I think are okay. So I don't
know. That's the thing is I think that is exactly what makes these songs that much better to the listener experience, to the person interacting with the artist. I think that is what actually drives it that much further. I'm not saying that the songs are bad on Rumors or Tragic Kingdom, but it's just like there is an aspect of listening to a song like Don't Speak or listen. Like listening to a song like Dreams, to where it's like, ooh, this is about the guitarist.
Well, I'll say this. If we want to call that histrionics, that they're just kind of like amping it up, right? Mm-hmm. To be like, oh, these entangled. I mean, you could do that with literally any band, I think, at certain points. Because I think bands do that, especially bands of that era that were like the bigger, like the mystique behind them.
Sure.
God, we were just talking about like Led Zeppelin, right? And like Black Magic. And like there's an air. I don't know. At some point, I think that era, especially of rock and roll, to me, always has a kind of showmanship to it that.
Sure. But it's like Zeppelin was more mysterious, to where it feels like Fleetwood Mac promoted it.
But I want to make one thing clear, and I think this is where we're maybe on separate wavelengths here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to speak for most of their discography, but on this record, that songwriting, like the craft of it, is like A+ for me. It's great. I don't need the mistake. To be honest, I don't think I knew about most of it when I was listening to Rumors when I was younger.
That's fair. Yeah. I think Rumors does stand on its own, but I just think in the long haul, it just turned into a really, really long breakup that they kind of held on to keep the band relevant.
I think there's a, now I'm just thinking of other bands we could do this with, The Doors. I don't like The Doors though.
Same.
What's the almost famous line? Jim Morris, a buffoon attempting to be a poet.
Give me the guess who. They had the courage to be drunken buffoons. And that's what,
So the chain, I think initially, when I think of why this song strikes me so much, it is the Steady Four, because that is its own genre now of song. That Steady Four on the floor, the quarter notes, right? Or, I mean, again, it's the rhythm of it, right? It's the bass picking that goes with that. I've written two of those songs myself.
Congratulations.
And both have been rips off of the chain.
Yeah. Well, there's something to be said for that approach on drums. It's tried and true. I know I say that all the time, that statement, but that is just something where I'm like, it's undeniable. Like a steady just... that works. Like everybody just feels it. It's the magic of percussion. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that's something where it's like everybody gets it. Even people without rhythm, they get that. It's already just kind of your hip thrust a little bit to the side. You know, like.
To your credit about the harmonies being so great, I think what makes the song to me, at least in the first half of it, so compelling is you have that steady kick with really long-winded verses, right? The melody is like all for like leaving things out, and the harmonies are pretty great. I mean, Stevie Nicks, I love her voice. I think
she's got a great voice.
I think there's like this is like to me an industry problem, not a performer problem. Back when the industry allowed like female singers to have unique voices and not like force them into like certain kinds of voices, right? So unique and so cool. It's when they move from that into the chorus where, like you said, the snare comes in right on the quarters, but then it's the lyrics are snappy.
The lyrics are snappy. And a secret part of that sauce, again, is there's no bass during the verses. So the bass comes in also on the chorus. Mm-hmm. That's when it finally gets that moment, and it kind of pushes it along. And you're absolutely right. I'm right, you're right, whoever said it first. But
hey, we know our rights, man.
That's right. But the vocal harmonies come really strong right there, but they're already happening during the verse anyway. So it just feels like the secret sauce coming into that chorus is just that steady doom, doom, mm-hmm. doom. And it's such a tasteful approach to where, you know how hard it is to tell a bass player to, like, hey, don't do anything during the entire verse. And like you said, it's a little bit more of a windy, or not windy, but like kind of a longer drawn out verse section. Right. It's like, hey, don't do anything right here. Just kick it. Maybe you can be one of the voices going, listen to the wind blow.
It's funny because it's the vocal melody that goes into halftime, right? Mm-hmm. into the chorus. It's kind of neat. Yeah. And it's also where, and this is the other part that I love so much, the lyrics on the verses are nice. It's also like, I think this is where like the Frankenstein nature of this song
yep.
becomes so important, because it's composed of like, what, four or five other songs?
Yeah. And it's like all five members are the only song off of Rumors. It is the only one where all five members are credited with songwriting.
Right.
You know, and it's because they take from all these other different ones.
And that to me is where it should make it a mess, but I love the fact that the verses are like background scenery, right? And like mm-hmm. very like naturalistic in a way that I like. Like, I don't think any lyric here is egregious. I think it's good. But
I
when
agree.
We go into the chorus, and that's Stevie Nicks who brought those lyrics in, mm-hmm. supposedly about.
I actually listened to the demo. You can look up, I'll play it in the background. In the background, everybody, is what they call the Chain demo. Sounds nothing like the Chain. There's just one moment where she sings, if you don't love me now, you will never love me again. I can still hear you saying, you will never break the chain.
And
great lyrics.
Those are great. And that's what, I mean, clear it makes the song to me, but mm-hmm. that it's like when they're actually saying something, right?
Yeah.
And that's something I've tried to like express to other people about songwriting before that feels so like easy, like, well, just say something. Like, you actually can say things. You don't have to like just mm-hmm. try to make lyrics sound pretty. You can actually, I mean, it's the same thing. Funny enough, I've learned it from teaching. Like, you can try to lead someone into an idea, but sometimes you can just tell them what you want. And like to say, like, yeah. if you don't love me now, you'll never love me again. That's freaking good, man.
It fits into what, because like during the verses, like you were saying, it's kind of like ambient and there's vagueness to the lyrics. There's, like you said, there's a cool natural, like, listen to the wind blow, watch the sunrise, you know, run in the shadow, damn the dark, damn the light, which I think run in the shadows, damn the dark, damn the light. There's a way I can make that cool to me. You know, to where it's okay, like, you're running in the shadows. Like, I hate what you are in the dark, but I hate when I realized, which would be the light, what you've been doing. You know, I can see how that's great, but yeah, all of a sudden you hit that. And if you don't love me now. And of course, that vocal melody just crushes.
Yeah. And it's all about the way it interacts with the quarter notes, right? Like, it's all mm-hmm. it's all built around that in such a cool way, because that's like, and I guess that's how most quarter note songs work, but
sure.
that's what makes them, I think, so easy in one way, like so tempting to want to do. I mm-hmm. mean, I hate like Seven Nation Army, for example, yeah. but it's also, I think, hard to pull it off in a way that makes it feel original, which is the problem, right? One mm-hmm. quarter note song can sound exactly like others, and it's all about the melody, you're right. And like, it's like the desperation in that melody when you get into the chorus is so
I use the term all the time, but there's that urgency of the emotion, like it's pouring out in those vocals. And to be fair, this song could have fallen victim to it, because without that callback, I think that this melody would fall short in the long haul. You know, like, it's a great one, it first kicks in, you know, if you don't love me now, you will never love me again, and I can still hear you. With that note is just, and you get the all of a sudden the backup vocals kicking, and if you don't love me, you don't love me. All of a sudden, that's cool, because I think you and I have grown up with it. All you do is you put a delay on the main vocal. In this instance, there's the call and response of the two crossed lovers in that moment. So it's, again, like I said, it feels a little put on, but damn, it's put on well. It's a good show.
So I guess, maybe that's where I would end up with it. I don't agree in that record and that song, like the showmanship is like required. Like, and like when you take it off, it's like the Emperor Has No Clothes. I don't want to, I think that Fleetwood Mac deserve their flowers, all five, for this
Absolutely.
Song.
I agree.
Yep, for, yep. Again, like, they're good freaking songs, man. But
yes,
I also think at another level, most of songwriting is kind of showmanship anyway. Like, some
you're
of
not
it's
wrong.
Like,
you're not wrong.
I mean, yes. We've definitely covered bands before where, like, the lead singer just sells out and makes the song work when it really shouldn't.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that I did watch a live performance of this earlier, again, on that quest for the missing vocal part that I still have never found. I'm going to try to find it at some point in the future. But watching them, it's like all of a sudden they hit the You Don't Love Me Now and Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Cunningham. I'm going to just keep calling him that for the rest of the show. But Lindsey Buckingham, those two lock eyes for the, and if you don't love me, then you don't. And they're just staring at each other on stage. And I'm going like, get out of here. Okay, maybe they were just trying to summon the true emotions behind it. I'm like,
we used to look at each other all the time on stage. Most of the time, it's
up.
Because
we were friends. We were having a good time together.
There's more than one video of us playing live and us looking at each other during the song and just kind of shaking our heads at each other. And I know in each moment why. It's because one of us screwed up or something happened.
That's typically it.
Yeah. I can't remember. I think it's the farewell show I played in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's that song, Every Stone. It's the only time that we played that song. Beautiful. And I hadn't finished. Right. I was writing it. During the performance, if anyone goes watch that video, Every Stone, I am writing the lyrics in real time because had written them.
Buddy, baby guy. The amount of times I've done that on stage, songs where I'm like, I don't have lyrics, but the band wants to play it. And I'm just like, I got to figure it out. And just mumbles. Like, I invented mumble rock.
Man, that was you. Yeah. You had a very nice little solo there, but I think it literally was maybe, I think it was the only time we've ever played that song. And halfway through the solo, you just looked at me and you were like, that's all I got. You didn't say that, but the face.
Oh, yeah. No, there was a chemistry. There was a chemistry. We were still together. Never mind. But well, let's continue on with the progression of this song.
Yeah, yeah. So going into, well, then it goes back. That's the funny thing too, is the going back into the verse like it did. Like, there's no, you would expect an escalation, right? Like, I would something. I'm trying to remember the song. I don't think they introduce anything necessarily in that second verse that makes it.
They don't really, except for the phantom Stevie Nicks part that I'm apparently never going to hear again, except for the 1982 live performance. You'll be able to hear what I'm talking about, everybody. But I remember hearing it on a real recording.
Part of me is like, when you teach certain kinds of writing, like actual writing, like when I teach like essay writing and that, and you like, I mean, it's the refrain everybody's heard before, where you got to learn the rules to break the rules. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we both are from the school of, when you get to like the second verse of something, like something needs to change. Like, there needs to be something.
Yeah.
And I think the exception to that is if your verse is like really freaking good, you don't.
It's true. If it ain't broke. Yeah, absolutely. One of those situations. And I think this is the instance of it, to where everything is still flowing good. And yeah. And then the only real difference I can hear is coming back into the second chorus is Fleetwood, the drummer, does a little bit more of a like da 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 da, you know, that's the change. And if there's anything I can say for Fleetwood, he's a really tasty drum fills guy.
Yeah,
you know, for as much as I love The Chain, I got a sweeter song if I bring up Dreams. God, that song is almost perfect.
That, or to me, Thunder, for the
Thunder's
same
a good
reason.
Choice. Yeah,
and the guitar stuff on Thunder I love a lot. But I think we're in the same ballpark of why it works so well. Like, there's the groove, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
That it goes with. I do think there's the other difference I'm remembering, and this is where I want to make a quick amendment to what some of the verses you were saying. The
where I got
run
the
in
lyrics
the shadows,
okay,
run yeah. in the shadows, damn your love, damn your lies. And then later in the second verse, it's break the silence, damn the dark, damn the light.
Okay,
but there is, and I think the what is it? Listen to the wind blow, down comes the night. Like it does yeah. change the. It's so minuscule, right?
Still, you're
so
scarring me when you did the down comes the, because that's night. That's what I hear. She does it. She does it. There's a recording out there. I'm going to go to record stores all over the place trying to find a 1977 original.
But so don't you think, though, I'm wondering partly, well, I have two theories about okay. this. One is the reason they replay it is because this song is so Frankenstein together that it had to be that way.
I kind of have an issue with the tape splicing.
Yeah, there's that. I also think, though, literally it's a verse chorus outro. Mm-hmm. So part of it I wonder is too, knowing the verse works so well, knowing it moves into the chorus so well, they know that's the last time they're going to hear the chorus, and it's mm-hmm. a good chorus, right? And it's
very,
not
very
like the
chorus.
Kind of like traditional structure. So replaying it the way that they do is like a kind of almost like honoring the animal kind of deal.
Yeah, there's a comfort, and there's also a little bit of like in the know, where it's like, believe me, if you think nothing's going to change, you're in store for something, you know. Yeah, and yeah. and they do coming out of that second chorus when they hit the kind of D sus chord and go into that D augmented. Like right before, I agree that the chorus is the highlight of this song, but if there's got to be a runner up, it's the bass line. Such a simple bass line, but it is that it's what we were just saying. We've had so much of the same running through this, and then you get that little, like I said, the D suspended, D augmented chord little moment, and then you get this bass line, Mick Fleetwood, I'm just like, I love the way that you just hear a very subtle like hi-hat, you know, on the 2 and 4, mm-hmm. and then that bass comes in, and it's like something's happening here.
Yeah, yeah. It's the build-up is, I'm laughing because part of it too, it's such a My Friend Sam kind of a song. Cause that was, or I should sure. say, we're such a Fleetwood. Cause that was like a go-to for us in a way that I think song to song, it probably worked. But when you put like five of our songs together, it's like, ooh, man, maybe did that a lot.
I feel a kinship to Lindsey Buckingham actually sometimes listening to some of the stuff he writes.
I actually could. And it's funny is I keep thinking of the solo. This is a deep cut, everybody. The solo you played for Bethlehem DC, which I think is one of your best solos.
Okay. I you know what? I can have that playing in the background right now.
I think I wish it didn't have that screw up in it. I wish we didn't.
Heartbreaking. Very heartbreaking. And it's not even that it was a screw up. It's just he left one of the guitar tracks up higher and turned the other one that was trying to correct the mistake lower. And I'm like, oh, just turn up the other one, huh, Hector? Thanks, buddy. In the garage.
But that's right. But yeah, it is. It's. I mean, again, everything. I think the probably most complex part of the song is what the guitar is doing, right? In the mm-hmm. verses and in that kind of final solo. Everything else is so simple, and like the bass is so simple. The decision to do that little build up. Everything about it is so, like, almost like workmen, right? And like what they're deciding to do.
Well, and I'll just cover my bases again. Anybody, go ahead and listen to the first two verses. It's two guitars. Just Colton can say what he wants, but it is two guitars.
No,
on the
but
recording.
That's fair.
I understand you were saying playing live. He's compensating as one guitar player.
With headphones, I listen to laptop speakers, which is
that's
the best
true.
To listen to music
clearly. You're just trying to pull it out.
You're okay, you got
Fear Inoculum sucks.
You got a vein in your head. Fuck.
You must have listened to Fear Inoculum on a laptop.
Fear
That's also something that I'm really surprised by, because the guitar is fairly elaborate during the verses. Like, that's not that easy to play, even though I did kind of learn it earlier again today.
Of course you did.
Okay. But I mean, it's Travis picking, dude.
For the layman.
By the way, Travis picking. Thank you, Merle Travis. That's where we get the name from.
Look at you.
Hey, just wanted to drop some history there for everybody.
Yeah.
Old American country songwriter. But when he hits the solo on this, don't you expect the solo is gonna, at least the first time I heard it, I was expecting the solo to go off. Mm-hmm. Like, more notes, essentially. But just the fact that he decides, like, I'm just gonna ride this note and then slide an octave higher, mm-hmm. and just ride that note. And then, like, maybe I'll add some little notes off of the high E. And it's perfect. Because when he's starting it, he's literally just playing the song's capoed on the second fret.
Yeah.
But he's just going to the fifth fret, or I guess the seventh fret in that moment, and just hitting that note on the B string and hitting the high E string to where it just gives that chorus effect.
You know? This feels like a weird, like, memory, but we played, now I'm curious if you remember this. This was with our original lineup of My Friend Sam with Kyle. Mm-hmm. We played a show at the Cedar Center with the band from the UK.
Are you talking about Keating?
We not played with Keating.
It wasn't Keating. I always forget their name. And somebody actually shot us an email for this. Thank you for shooting us an email. Where they corrected me. I brought up this band before. Okay, I don't remember.
But they were pretty good. It was one of those, like, every now and then you get a touring band to come play with the local bands that, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, what are you doing here, man? This is like on your way to LA.
Big mistake, buddy.
Somewhere between LA and San Francisco, they needed a night to play some other show. I'm not gonna remember the name of the band, but their guitarist was all like, so like notes. Like, it was just like tons of notes. And you actually said at the end, you're like, it's nice to see someone who plays notes again. Like,
yeah.
And I remember, I don't know why that always stuck with me, but I like it because I think there's,
I'm not downplaying
off,
at all.
Oh no, I don't think you are, but that's the thing is, like, if he did go into like shred zone, right, whatever it is, that song is so weighted. It's got anchors in it. The quarter notes.
Yeah.
Everything about it is like lumbering.
I would, just because like, I agree. I think they were just trying to get the song across. But I feel kind of like later on watching live performances, that's when they're actually experiencing the song. Mm-hmm. Because everything else was kind of writing and recording at the same time, or recording and writing at the same time, however you want to interplay that.
Yeah.
But it's like they didn't have the song completed while they were recording. You know, so they were kind of figuring out the song, and it kind of came together at that point. Like when they hit the big, the chain, keep us together. I'm like, I would have really loved a drum fill to let us know. You know, and they do it live because it makes sense. But in that point in time on the recording, I think there was just kind of like, well, we got to come in here. This is the clear part we have to come into based off of how long this part goes. You know, and like watching live performances, he does start riffing on it, and it sounds great.
So you want to feel going into that final vocal part?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind even a little more riffing. None of this is saying that the song's damned by this.
Right.
It's just the song is kind of, like I said, it's kind of figuring itself out as it's being recorded. And so, like, when it hits the change, keep us together, it feels like it just pops in, and that's why there's a lot of voices on it. Like, we just got to find a way to make it punch just the right way, because the drums are still just doing the I'm like, it's the nerd in me, I guess. I don't know. There's no right or wrong on this. It's just, I feel like that would have given the song just a tick more in that particular instance.
It's but maybe, hard.
Maybe there is something to the mystery and the random placement of it, like it happening, because the first time I heard it, I never had any complaint, but now having listened to it for
I think
20 some odd years,
go, there's two things. One is I think I would call this song perfect. Like, we've had our like perfect songs before.
Okay.
I think I would, mainly because it's also so antithetical to how I think you should write songs and how I think a song should come together. Like, I don't need a song to be organic, but I do love, I know we both do, simplicity kind of like working its way in. And I think there's something to be said about the more extra parts there are to the song, it loses the mystique of what it's like,
I can
setting out to do from the beginning. And it's kind of, every song sets the parameters, right? Of like what it is, what it's supposed to be, what you're expecting from it. It's why you don't get a lot of like folk artists who have like weird metal breakdowns. Although the Avett Brothers did that once and it was terrible and they shouldn't have done it. So
take that, Avett Brothers.
And it's like lyrically the same thing, right? Every lyric, it kind of sets the parameters of like the vocab that you're going to use. And it kind of sets what you can expect from it. I appreciate that the song has that like lumbering kind of, and going into the, I mean, they pick up obviously, right?
Sure, sure.
In that outro. But in my head, like, 'cause I'm trying to imagine what you're talking about. And I've heard live, like you're talking about that to me is where the difference between getting something on tape to the live show. I think a lot of bands that I've liked, I mean, Coheed is one I'm thinking of more recently. I remember Coheed for Everything Evil. This is a good example, actually. Everything Evil. When they play that song live now, Claudio is, I remember when he used to do it, I can't remember what tour it was. He starts adding in a verse or a solo to the Claudio part. Claudio. And it's like a, you know, Claudio shred fest kind of deal.
Yep.
And arguably, right, you're like, oh yeah, solo would probably work there, but they weren't soloing when they did the second stage Turbine Blade, and it wouldn't have made, like, thinking about it now, it doesn't make sense.
You're right. I don't think that would have worked for a recording. I felt like that is more for the live aspect. I can't say I'm right on this. It's, there is a magic to the fact that this just kind of came to be. But there is a part of me that is curious as to, like, ooh, what would that recording have been with just like a couple of things to where you know that this part, like I said, with the drums, just having a little drum fill into knowing we're about to hit the chains, keep us together. Yeah. Like, I can't help but be curious to it. I don't, like I said, I don't think the song is sacrificed because of that. But it, I mean, Stevie Nicks already said that she was more of a like, you got to feel the music, you got to be there. And Lindsey Buckingham was the guy who was all about all the intricacies. And this song, it seems like it gets to lean more towards the Stevie Nicks side.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, I mean, I think Big Love is an unbelievable live song. You listen to the recording of Big Love, it's crap. Take that, Lindsey Buckingham, or really just Fleetwood Mac. I don't know why you guys did that. The live performance of Big Love, unbelievable. I don't know if you've heard it, but it's so good.
I have to hear that. Maybe, are you going to play it now?
Yeah, it's in the background right now. Yeah, he's finger picking like a madman.
I do take your point, though, that it's also working within limitations of how they chose to put this song together, which, again, so strange. And I mean, obviously, I've never done that. I have Frankenstein songs from like the writing perspective, like songs where like parts were meant to go in other parts and that. But it's never been a kind of just plug in and play. Like, it's always taken like finessing. And I mean, literally, I just did it. I just took a song and fixed it together.
Yeah, well, it's a different thing. Like, what happened with The Chain was they had a whole bunch of mics in a room. I think it is weird that I'm recalling these numbers, but I think it was 10 mics on the drums, it was like three on Lindsey Buckingham's guitar or whatever, but they just kind of like jammed it. And then they did something to her. For anybody who's not used to this, they were taking razor blades and cutting the tape and putting it together. For us in the digital era, all we do is literally just put the cursor over it, split, and then like it's crazy to me that I'm like, it's the same idea, but that's got to be way more exhausting.
Yeah.
I would have hired a staff as well. I'm like, I'm not doing that shit. That is too much. But that's how this song kind of comes together, and that's where I get more upset with certain parts to where I'm like, oh, I bet if you knew what it was going to be,
yeah,
then we're good to go. But you spent so much money to be in the studio in the first place, so it, they made it work, but I just can't help it.
I guess the way too that I think about it, and with music, I don't think it's hard. You know, I don't, for as much as I love songwriting, I'm not as interested, or I have been in the past. I feel like I am more now of going back and reading more about how certain things were put together and created. But in movies, at least, which I have done more of that reading in, like there's a lot of that where people go, oh yeah, we saved it in the edit. Like the movie itself was awful.
Yeah.
And you had to save it in the edit. Like, I think it's weird.
Yeah, that's one of those, like, right? I guess you say that, but maybe.
Well, and like writing, right? Mm-hmm. That is all editing. Like the actual writing portion is such a small part of like what makes like a written work complete. I think music is one of those weird things where you said where it's more acceptable. And I think what Fleetwood Mac do is way different even from what we're talking about, but it is more acceptable, I think, and more value to have the more organic one take. It's all there kind of deal. I think it's partly like the form, right? And like the way that recording works in that. But
well, that's the thing is you're talking about like the writing process, whether it be writing literature or writing a song in that instance, that's like outside of the actual written in, like when you're talking about editing a movie, you're editing something that's recorded. When you're editing a recording of music, you're editing something that's already there.
Yeah.
Where it's like the editing process for writing, it's like that's all behind the scenes. That's legitimate. That's before the in your face.
And we both have had records just lost in the editing process. Like literally
lost.
Oh
God. Yes. Yeah, for anybody waiting for My Friend Sam's hiatus tunes, keep waiting.
Yeah, that, another title that I don't think we should have used, and we didn't. But
yeah, it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
And I have a record that was almost lost, and it's coming out. But so and it fades out, which I've never done, and I would like to.
Again, I think it fades out because it's spliced together. It's a jam. So it's just like at this point, they didn't end the song. They didn't find the perfect ending. And there was a live performance where I went like, that was a really good ending.
See, it's funny. When I heard the live performance, I heard that 1997 one, my first thought was, oh yeah, that's why they faded out. Cause they I was like, you didn't write an ending. It wasn't good.
The 1982 live performance. That was the one cause I watched the 97 one as well. The 1982 live performance. That was solid. But again, it was also kind of a pretentious performance. Again, like I said, or like watching it, I was just like, are you guys more interested in like the money, fortune, and fame? And it's like, I don't need it.
Talk me through the pretentious part. I'm not trying to go to bat for Fleetwood because you've already mentioned the kind of histrionics, the playing up the breakup angle. Is it just like they play in a pompous way? Is it the ponytails?
It's a little bit of how they carry themselves. I'm like, it's very derivative, and it does. There are times where it doesn't feel natural. It's what I was saying about Moody Blues, to where there was just a little bit of this, like, you know what universe you're involved with, and you kind of just try to go to the tropes of this, like, I mean, the song Big Love is a song to where, again, if you listen to the live performance of it, it's incredible. Then you listen to the recording of it, and it's like, you sound like you're trying to fit into the 80s. It doesn't, like, be yourself. Be your effing self.
Wait a second. We need to take a small pause. I got to re-listen to Big Love.
Okay. Are you listening to the recording?
I'm listening to a recording part.
Sounds nothing like the live performance.
Full music video, though.
Again. Oh my God, stop. Just listen to it by yourself. I don't need to.
I'm just getting into Big Love now.
The live performance is where it's at. But
what I'll say, this might be my last thought, and it's not even about Fleetwood Mac, it's about Queen. But
okay,
I do think it's almost unfair to bands that were from both the 70s and then made it to the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like where
you're right.
Like when I hear like I've been listening to more Queen lately, and when you hear like Another One Bites the Dust, and I can't remember what record
boom,
Dust.
Boom, boom.
It's another big good bass line, but like those like later 70s records are so like disco tinged, like tons and tons of it. And I think, God, first, it was such a big, like, music wave that hit, and like all these bands get sucked into it because it's like that's where all the like money is going to, and they that and move it to the 80s.
Yeah,
we're like synth 80 pop, just like, and like in Queen, when you hear the records about the 80s, you're like, man, they didn't stand a chance. And I like some of the 80s Queen, but it's
sure,
it's so different. And when I hear, when I listen to Big Love, I'm like, oh yeah, this is 80s Fleetwood Mac.
And when you get when you get a chance, don't do it right now, please. Listen to the but you listen to the live performance, oh my God, what he's doing on guitar, and it's just him and guitar, and that's where I'm like, you should have done this. But because of the 80s, maybe I'm just accusing Lindsey Buckingham of being too much of a perfectionist and really striving for like, I gotta be a rock god, you know, because I think Stevie Nicks has a lot of that, like, you're just naturally a rock god.
I think maybe more than anyone else in that band, she has the kind of natural, I mean, she's the one, I think, and all of that like mysticism that we've talked about with like the chain and like all of that, that's just her. Like, I think she's the, all the best songs are hers. Anyway.
Can we say like that chain, when she hits that like, chain, when she hits that high note on it, that brought it home. But again, watching a live performance, she held that note out kind of obnoxiously, or she just held it out through the entire part where they were singing, and I'm like, this is craving attention, Stevie, just go.
They're
to
on a stage, of course they're craving attention.
They were all fighting for attention. I think they were all fighting for attention.
I don't even want to watch Fleetwood Mac. I want to watch Rob watch Fleetwood Mac.
That's not a bad idea. That might be our first actual like recorded where you can watch Know Your Rights.
That's right. Well, and
me staring at a screen going like, fuck this.
How about this? Any other? I mean, we'll close up our thoughts in the third segment, but let's listen to the Blamley. Take some time. I have to think about what I'm going to give this out of 100, because that's apparently what we do with these songs.
Yes,
and
we do.
Have you put any clues in this second segment?
Not only have I put clues, I will give you the same clues in the next section.
I feel I know exactly how you feel, because I both forgot that you were doing it and also got panicked halfway through going,
oh,
I haven't caught anything.
I didn't, baby. I did all of them on purpose. I was super prepared for this one.
All right.
Bass blown.
Bass blow, Blamley.
Give it to the Blam. Yeah, use your saying.
Yeah, man. Give it to the Blam. That's our shirt. Give it to the Blam. Yeah.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Danko, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
Welcome back, everyone. I am ready to ask you what my previous scores have been.
Ooh, so I think
I don't need every score. I just need to remind myself, when it came to Dylan and the Beatles, we gave those tracks 85.
85, correct.
Okay. That's my, like, whereas if the out of 10 scoring we give for our full discographies, the Weezer line is my guiding star of like where to put bands. The 85 is what's helping me out, because I'm like, if anything's going to touch the 80s at this point, I have to be really sure.
Yeah,
I think it belonged in the 80s.
Well, who wants to go first? You want to rock, paper, scissors? You want to say it?
Is this a clue? Are you giving me
clues? It's not a clue. No, okay. The clues are done. The clues are over. The breadcrumbs are behind us.
I'm scared.
I'm pretty sure you're lost in the woods.
I'm so...
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Okay, no. Say it.
Is that Taylor Swift? No.
No, no, none of this is clues. I'm not dropping clues, all right? When I dip, you dip, we dip.
Please stop. Please stop. You're doing so many phrases. I'm like,
wish,
I can't.
I wish we were doing that song.
Maybe I did. I put my hand up on your hip. I'm very long-winded, so I have to say one thing, and I'll give my score after that. Okay. My theory that I gave you, I can't remember when, of like looking at the Beatles and Bob Dylan and like explaining modern rock music. And I'm talking like rock music in what comes after both those artists. Cause like obviously rock music comes from before that, but yeah. That
for
theory
example,
I had of like
Fleetwood Mac.
Well, you can kind of relate different bands that are playing like any form of like rock music after Bob Dylan and the Beatles to one of those two. That was my theory, that they form a kind of like a branch, these two different branches that these other branches kind of trail off of. And it's like on one side, you have more kind of open ended kinds of music. Right. And that's Dylan. Yeah. It's folk inspired. Right. And it's also with like the lyrics are driving it for the most part. And on the other hand, you have real tight pop songwriting, right. Mm-hmm. Where like it's more about the interchanging of the parts and everything is for the most part, right? More, I think, studio focused as well as songwriting.
Yeah.
I think Fleetwood to me is then it's the Beatles, right? They're far more on this side.
I agree. I think there's some internal affair with that as well. Like I was saying about with like Stevie Nicks, I think she wanted to lean more Dylan side towards like just feel the music, go for it.
I agree with that. And I think that's where this song to me is so interesting for exactly what you just said. And I think it is trying to get, and like, it's partly, it's also kind of country tinge too, right? Where it has some of that influence, but I still see it as a part of that branch of the Beatles. And I think that's where it being so tightly constructed, but also such a mess, like held together by so much duct tape and like about to fall apart because none of the parts should be together. And yet when I hear it, I'm like, man, this is freaking every time. Every time I listen to this song, I'm always surprised by how much the chorus and then that outro hit the same way. Like, it's kind of like, I wait for it to kind of lose the power that it has. It is a 75.
75? Not bad. Not bad. Yeah. And I was originally going to give like a 65 to this. And I think through this conversation, and honestly, from today, it jumped up to about a 70. So I'll go 70, but it's because every now and then this song hits for me.
Yeah.
And every now and then this song is kind of okay. And who knows if that's just like over time, if it's just too much familiarity. But when I said earlier that, you know, there's a little bit of that like buttered toast, like sometimes buttered toast hits.
It does. You know? Like sometimes, people. Yeah. Butter
sometimes
toast.
That's it. I'm in. I want to have another. I'm eating this for the rest of the day. And then some days I'm like, no, I'm not in the mood for it. And that's just kind of how I felt. And today when I was listening to it, I was like, shit, this song is hitting. I listened to it. And I enjoyed going down that rabbit hole of trying to find the missing recording that may or may not exist.
Yeah.
You know, but I was just enjoying myself the entire time. I was enjoying listening to live performances. I'm like, this song is a very well constructed song. And I think 70 is my Mendoza line of this, or my Weezer line, you know, it's like, this is a good tune. I have nothing to say that it's a bad song. And I think Fleetwood Mac is kind of that for me. Like over time, they've turned into a band that I think there are three categories of bands. Overrated band, underrated band, properly rated band.
Uh-huh.
This is an overrated band to me.
Interesting. Yeah. I think it's weird. Like this record that the song comes from Rumors is to me, it's like catching them at the peak of like just getting these two new people to switch up their songwriting that are bringing a very different like American country folk thing to like a bunch of British musicians.
Typical and Americans taking
typical
over.
Just switching it up, right? And it's getting one record out of the way that kind of gets settled of what it could be. And then this is, I mean, it's to use sports, of course. It's like signing someone season one or one season, and like the chemistry is still kind of getting worked out. And then that next full season, everything is perfect. And then after that, the attitudes come in. I'm talking about Jimmy Butler, by the way. Next season, Jimmy Butler's going to be much better, especially when they get Giannis.
do we want to start talking about the whereabouts of Giannis coming
especially
up?
Where we get, but no, I if you had said 65, man, I wouldn't have a problem with it, because it is. I think it's one of those things where once we start looking at songs specifically, it gets really hard, because the line of like where to play certain songs is tricky for me. It's also, though, like we started with, I mean, not necessarily just Let It Be as like the ultimate Beatles song, of course. Same with, you know,
I did not say that, like a Rolling Stone. I did not say ultimate songs for either one of those artists.
And you did. And I'm not, but because we open with these two, like two of the most influential,
very, very historically like impactful songs,
modern rock songwriters, whatever you want to call it. It does make me kind of readjust how I think about some of these songs. But yeah, I think we're fair, man. 70, 75.
Hey,
I'm nicer than you. This is great. I feel good.
Something we left out besides, it is overdubbed guitars on the verses, whatever. This song, the cool part is that it is, everybody's just doing their part. Honestly, I actually wish I would have brought this up a little bit more. The organ on this song, that first chorus, that organ in the background is so perfect, because it's just, it's so swirling, and it's not like, it's not on the point, but it just, it adds this little like vibe to it. I'm sorry, Christine McVie, that it's, or McVie, I'm pretty sure it's McVie. I'll go with you.
I feel bad that that is literally the first time that we're talking about the organ, or her, minus when I got her name wrong before.
Yeah, we talked about everybody else. Here's your flowers, because I think the organ on the song is great, and it does add that, it adds to the dark end of the sound.
I like the piano in Silver Springs. Anyway, there you go. That's fine.
I love Oh Daddy. It's a good song.
There we go, everybody. Well, shoot, man. Now, you told me that you've already left your breadcrumbs and that you would tell me them again. Do you want to just give me a few? And I'll, because I missed everything.
You're probably going to get them. I'm going to tell you all of them, because I
have Rob is going to tell me some clues so that I know what our next song spotlight will be. The next episode is going to cover Relo Kylie.
Yes, Kylo Ren. It's going to be fun.
Where are you at with Relo Kylie?
I listened to half of an album.
Which one?
I can't remember. I think it was the one you said you really liked.
Under the Black Light? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Which we'll talk about Fleetwood Mac again. I have a feeling.
Yeah. That's right. All right. So when you first asked if I was going to give you hints, I said, we're talking about my hints.
Yeah.
I said, talking about my hints. That was the first.
Talking about my generation.
You're not.
Try to slow it down. We already done The Who, though.
It's absolutely not The Who. Okay. And then I was telling you how I was looking for this version of the song that I haven't been able to find. And I said, I even had the month of May to look for it.
Yeah, you did say that, but I mean, that also just made sense, because you had the month of May.
I had the month of May to look for it, yeah. And then I said, Dreams, I got a sweeter song right there. Nothing? There was a moment.
I had the month of May, sunshine.
There was a moment where you were talking about movies, and I was like, well, I guess you say that.
But you said my baby girl.
Did
you call me baby girl at one time?
I called you baby guy.
You gave baby guy. Okay.
We're doing my girl. And the other hint that I dropped was when I said that it's like, I don't know. I think that they were just really more concerned about the money, fortune, and fame. And I don't need that.
I do remember you saying that. But also, I also know I was never going to get that, because other than the very first verse and chorus of My Girl, I don't know any of the other words to that song.
I'll tell you this much. This is more than likely going to be my highest rating song.
That's interesting.
I think My Girl is one of the best songs ever written.
I am into this. Have we done any Motown? We haven't done anything. Motown.
I've been tempted
to do the Supremes several times. Good and like choice. Doing more Motown stuff, but I'm so excited for this.
Yeah.
Temptations, My Girl.
it's such a cliche song, and it's just worked its way into the annals of history that it's hard to listen to the song and really break down everything. When you do start breaking down the songwriting and the instrumentation, there's a lot to be said for it.
I'm excited.
Be damned. Yeah.
When I think of Motown, I think Unchained Melody is always my kind of go-to.
I love that, like, song.
Top great tune. Song. But I am excited to talk about My Girl with you. And that's going to be so everybody will have
really
the month
close
of June.
To choosing, there you go. Yes. I was really close to choosing Change Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. But I'm gonna wait on this one.
Well, let's do this, man. Let's do this. So everybody, My Girl, 4 weeks from now. And next episode, we'll talk about Reel of Kylie. And buddy, thank you for talking to me about the chain.
Thank you for suggesting it. And honestly, the little bit I've listened to from Kylo Ren, I've enjoyed.
That's, you know, Kylo, I'm you're going to screw me up. Just like you've screwed me up with Colin Malloy now.
Oh, yeah. Colin.
Oh, buddy. Everyone, by the way, go listen to The Betts Metal, their new song, Metal. The Betts, I've talked about them before, Expert in a Dying Field. Their new song, they haven't announced a new record yet, but that song is fire.
I'm going to go listen to it right now. I like it. Maybe a little bit of it's playing in the background right now.
Oh, it's amazing. And
that's our outro music. That is that big hook coming in to snatch Colton off the stage.
Boom, boom.
Love you.
Love you.